Your daily TFMR podcast is brought to you by JMBullion.com, your number one most trusted online bullion dealer. Well, happy Thursday out there to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, April the 8th, 2021. It's time for your Thursday conversation. Of course, that fun, free public podcast we record every week with some of the biggest movers and the shakers in the precious metals industry. And if anybody can move it and shake it, it's my buddy Denver Dave Kranzler. Dave, as you know, runs a website, Investment Research Dynamics, but he's also the publisher of two great newsletters, Mining Stock Journal and the Short Sellers Journal. Both of those very valuable in this place and time. And so with as we approach earnings season and with the mining shares looking like maybe they're starting to break out, I thought we'd bring in Dave for a quick conversation. So Dave, my old friend, you mover and shaker, how are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for that intro. I don't know if I move and shake it, but one thing I'll never do is shit on it.
There you go. Well, an old guy like you, you're around back in the disco age, you know, probably doing the hustle.
That's true. I had bell bottoms.
I definitely see you more of a hustle guy than an electric slide, but maybe I'm wrong.
I had bell bottoms and I had those fake silk shirts, but I never had one of those big plastic combs in my back pocket. Never walked around with one of those.
Never needed that. Okay.
And right. I didn't have platform shoes.
Really? Well, you're tall enough as it is. Right?
So I know you're going to ask me a bunch of questions, and today I just have one question that I wanted to ask you.
Okay, sure.
Does Eric Sprott ever refer to you as turd?
He might have back in the day. I can't recall. You know what? It used to be fun. I used to get Alistair MacLeod to refer to me as turd because
I remember that. It sounded so funny in his British accent.
Kind of sounded like I was talking to C-3PO calling me turd.
And I do remember that. The first time I heard it, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And I should tell everybody, I was able to communicate with Eric this week. And hopefully they're kind of wrapping up some treatment stuff within his family. I think everybody knows his wife has been sick. And hopefully he'll be back. Oh, I don't know. Maybe sometime in May. Yeah, we'll see. But anyways, obviously still very busy with that, and who can blame him?
Thoughts and prayers with him.
Thank you. Dave, let's dive in. Because everybody here if you follow the daily podcast here at TFMR, and if you don't, well, shame on you for crying out loud. What are you paying for?
I don't know why you wouldn't. You're missing out on good information and entertainment.
For God's sake. Exactly. Anyway, folks may recall back on Monday, we looked at Newmont and looked at Franco Nevada and noticed that they were appearing finally to be breaking out of their downtrends from August, maybe getting above their 200-day moving average. And that's since been confirmed here as we've gone through the week. Now we sit on the cusp of first production reports and then earnings reports for the mining sector. And so with a focus on the miners today, I thought who better than Denver Dave, right? Mining Stock Journal. Dave, first of all, before we go and get started, what did they get as a subscriber to the Mining Stock Journal?
I guess it depends on their opinion of my research reports.
I suppose that's true.
It's all relative, right?
Well, actually, as of late, for the last 7 months, it should have been the Mining Stock Short Seller Journal. That would have been.
Actually, you know, what's interesting about that is because I primarily. So what they get is I put out a new newsletter every other Thursday, and when someone subscribes, I got to raise the price. Eventually, I will. Chris Marcus has been begging me to do that now for years, but I send a welcome email with a handful of back issues, and if people read through those, they kind of get a feel for. The stocks that I like and invest in, et cetera. And then recently out of subscriber requests, I added something that I call, cause I mainly focus on the micro cap. I call them the venture capital exploration stocks, because those have the most upside and the most leverage to gold and silver if they work out. But I did recently add something I call mid-cap, large-cap corner. I don't go into the fundamentals analysis of the large-cap stocks because there's thousands of eyeballs on them every day, and there's plenty of research, you know, free Wall Street research published on those. But what I try to do is pick out some mid-cap or large-cap names where I think there might be a short-term or intermediate-term trading opportunity. It's like if you have a sell-off in the sector, or maybe it happens all the time with Agnico Eagle. They'll release earnings, they'll miss estimates for a very, very explainable reason. You know, that's just a temporary thing, you know, for that quarter, and the stock gets hammered. And that's always been a buy opportunity when that happens to Agnico. And so I look for opportunities like that. I have a small section where I talk about those if I find ideas that I think are worth presenting. And I focus on using call options, either in the money, deep in the money, to replicate buying the stock, you know, because Newmont's $62 stock. I mean, you can't buy a lot of shares if you're just average guys like us, but you can create a lot of shares by using in the money calls. And also out of the money calls if you want to swing for the fence. So that's basically what you get.
Well, and everybody's, you know, every time I interview a CEO or something like that, you know, or we focus on the miners, I always talk about, you know, don't try to do this yourself. Yeah, unless you're, you know, Dave, you know, who's experienced and you know what you're doing. Everybody else, I mean, you read these production reports or drill results and it's like, oh, is that good? Is that a good grade? That kind of thing. So again, all the help you can get. I've known Dave for, a decade now. And I give his service five thumbs up, that's for sure. So, Dave, here's what I want to get at. This has been a brutal 7 months. It's been no fun at all. However, even though the pullback has gone on now, you know, for since August, on the long-term charts, you know, whether you use a GDX or GDXJ or whatever as your measure, there's really no, technical violation. You've got this big bull, a cup, whatever, a breakout, and now this handle that's like a bull flag. And so we're all waiting for that to break. And it's starting to look like we might be. And that's why I referenced some of those large caps. Let's start there. Obviously, a lot of this has to do with price too, but where do you think at this point? I mean, are we close to the end of this consolidation?
Wow, I haven't looked at a five-year daily of GDX in a long time. Holy crap. That thing looks like it's ready to launch.
Yeah, it does. And if you look at it on the weekly chart, you know, of the last 10 years, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Wow.
That's faked us out a couple of times.
I'm not a chart expert, but it kind of looks to me, it needs to push a little. There's kind of a downward sloping trading channel that it's been in since August, early August, because that's really when this pullback started. Even though there were still a lot of junior mining stocks that were popping through the end of the year and early this year, but it looks like it probably needs to just there's the upper bound of that. Of that downward sloping channel, it still looks like it needs to pop out of that. And it looks like it's the boundary right now is the 100-day moving average. So yeah, I think if it, technically speaking, if it pops above that, it's off to the races. But I mean, you know, I'm more of a fundamentals based guy, and the fundamental backdrop for the precious metals. And, you know, I'm not just talking about, monetary policy and the type of spending that the Biden government is going to start embarking on. And that's phenomenally bullish for gold and silver. But there's also, I mean, even though, you know, it's hard to prove without having access to inside numbers at the banks and the LBMA and the COMEX, But there's just signs everywhere that there's shortages of physical gold and silver. And it's probably the first time. I mean, there was shortages that had developed in silver back in 08. But this is probably the first time that we've seen. And again, it's, you know, guys who are over in London talk about it, you know, guys like Alistair McLeod. And that, you know, they have, and James Turk, and they have a closer feel for what's going on over there, and they have contacts over there. So we've never, in the 20 years that I've been involved in this sector, had both a fundamental backdrop that's as bullish as it is now, and kind of a supply demand technical factor that could really cause gold and silver to launch.
And if they do, obviously that's going to get reflected in the shares. And so I guess in your opinion, again, how do you base this? You look at earnings year over year, month over, or quarter over quarter, something to generate some buying momentum, you know, that begins to feed on itself in a virtuous cycle. I mean, outside of the chart, will you be watching price? What do you think will give you kind of this, okay, you know what, the train is definitely chugging out of the station at this point?
Sure. Just real quickly, I wanted to add, because I'm, sure, you know, I'm looking at this chart. This is what a gorgeous chart. So, I mean, the GDX ran from 16 over 44 in a pretty short period of time. You know, so what we've seen, and I mean, obviously, you know, the sell-off or the pullback has been helped along by, you know, an inordinate amount of intervention, official intervention in gold and silver, you know, using paper derivatives. But, you know, this actually, the pullback, I mean, it's, you know, close to and again, I'm not a Fibonacci expert, but just eyeballing it, it looks like we had close to a 50% Fibonacci pullback. In fact, it might be almost exact now that I'm looking at the chart, and I didn't even, you know, look at that until just now, but it looks like there's a good chance there may have been a bottom put in early March. It may not feel like it, but, you know, the pullback we had last week set a higher low if we can push above that 100-day moving average and hold above it. So to answer your question about what I look at in terms of evaluating mining stocks, again, I think the largest of the large caps are probably trade off, you know, traditional earnings and traditional financial metrics. And that's probably how big institutional investors evaluate them. And you know, I'm not, again, I don't spend a lot of time analyzing the large caps. I mean, I know who all the players are. And obviously Newmont and Barrick are the largest. So, I mean, I think right now, if you think that we're going to break above that 100-day moving average and start to move higher, I mean, certainly buying something like Newmont, or you mentioned Franco Nevada, typically the way the cycle works is that large flows of money flow into the large caps first. And that's the big institutions. They don't really dabble in the small caps because, you know, a lot of these mutual funds are so big, they'd have to buy the whole company to have a meaningful impact on their rate of return if they were going to invest in a, you know, $50 million market cap junior. So I think what we'll probably see is, and I think we're already seeing it actually, because Newmont has actually performed really well in the last 4 to 6 weeks. In fact, I had been playing call options on Barrick because Barrick had been underperforming Newmont, and I would have been better off just buying calls on Newmont. So, you know, I don't really analyze the financials or the fundamentals on these companies. You know, I kind of just look at the charts and figure out which large caps need to play catch up with the other ones.
Yeah.
If I want to make a play on them. And I also, and I mentioned these names in my newsletter, I think stocks like Goldfields and Anglo Gold Asante Yeah. I think those are, I actually like those fundamentally better than I like Newmont and Barrick.
Sure.
And I also think that, you know, at some point in the next, if you know, assuming, you know, we go into another big bull cycle, which I think we are, if I'm going to play the large caps, I want to, you know, I think we'll go through another merger period. You know, remember we went through that period where Barrick and Newmont were buying, you know, doing massive mega mergers. And, you know, I think next on the table to be acquired would be stocks like Gold Fields and Anglo Gold Ashanti. So I like to focus on those, and maybe even something like SSR Mining, which used to be called Silver Standard.
Yeah.
But they've diversified into gold. So they've got a pretty balanced production portfolio between gold and silver. And that's probably my favorite. Well, obviously, aside from First Majestic, that's everyone's favorite. But SSR Mining is probably my second favorite large cap silver gold play.
You're reminding me of that. I used to own that one, you know, when it was SSRI, and kind of fallen off my radar. I gotta take another look at that, Dave. In terms of you know, where you focus, whether the, you know, it's the kind of micro small cap exploration companies, that kind of thing. Will you be watching price, do you think? Is that maybe your most important indicator of when is the time to be building positions in those, you know, to kind of ride a wave up, just simply because rising price makes more things more economical and feasible, and you get more interest, you know, people looking to do private placements and stuff like that?
Boy, that, you know, that's a great question, because I get questions all the time from subscribers on timing of entries or reloading positions or adding to positions. And I mean, there's no right answer. And it's, you know, I'd like to say it's really more of an art than a science.
Sure.
And I think obviously no one knows for sure whether gold and silver are going to keep moving higher. I mean, we can look at the fundamentals and say, hey, gold and silver are cheap here. And, you know, it's the same thing with the, you know, the micro caps. I'll just generically refer to them as juniors. That's easier. You know, and how your investments perform in those things obviously depends on your timing of when you start buying them. And unfortunately, I see a lot of people making the mistake of, you know, thinking about buying them and thinking about buying, you know, it's like, you know, like standing at the edge of the high dive for your first time, deciding if you're going to jump off or not. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, after the rally in the sector is 75% over, they take the jump.
Yeah.
And they buy. And then, you know, 3 months later, they're underwater or even sooner. And the, you know, they kind of get pissed off. And it's like, yeah, you know, the way you got to play these is, and it's just a classic, you know, buy when everyone else is in fear and sell when there's euphoria. And so, I mean, I think, again, on the assumption that, you know, we're going to go into another bull cycle here, I think now is as good a time to start adding to positions or, you know, buying new positions on names that you've been looking at. You know, and don't expect to be right on your first purchase. I mean, we could easily go lower before we go higher. And, you know, again, and one of the things that I try to do is just offer a little some suggestions on capital management. And it's like, you know, if you've got a certain amount of money that you want to allocate into a certain stock, don't go out and buy it all at once, you know, and then cross your fingers. You know, again, like I said, it's the safest way to do it is just to assume your first couple purchases might be wrong. But then if you still have your conviction that we're going to go higher and you like the name, you know, keep buying, just hold your nose and keep buying. And, you know, I like to say, you know, especially in a period like we are right now, you know, maybe start waiting in, you know, 10 or 15% at a time. You know what I mean?
Right.
And one thing, the last time we chatted, you mentioned to me that Eric Sprott, one of the strategies he uses is he'll wait until a stock starts moving higher before he buys more, because he'll let the market confirm for him that he's right on his investment.
Precisely.
He knows he's not going to be right on all of them. And so, you know, let's say you take my advice and you take 20% of your capital and buy a junior stock, and all of a sudden it takes off. Don't be afraid to buy more of it at a higher price,
right?
Especially early, you know, especially what is probably early in what could be a massive bull cycle here.
It's exactly what Eric has told me on multiple occasions. You know, no, don't be afraid. If the market confirms that you were right, don't be afraid to then keep going after it. You know, and it's kind of like pressing your bets on a crap table, right? The table's hot. You keep pressing your bets. All of a sudden, you got a lot of chips in your rack.
That's right.
Eric's got quite a few chips in his at this point. All right. Hey, one last question I wanted to ask you about, Dave. And this is something, speaking of Eric, that he's been a proponent of for years. And I know this policy First Majestic has followed for quite some time. Endeavor Silver today, which I think is just mainly a primary silver miner that I've owned from time to time over the years, with their latest production reporting, and just came out today, I'll put the link on this page, said they sold, let me put it this way, their total silver production in this most recent quarter looks to be like 1.1 million ounces, 1.15 million ounces. They only sold 623,000 ounces of that, keeping the other 523,235 ounces in inventory in concentrate form. Man, it says here, man, this is their words, not mine. Management withheld metal from sale during the price correction of the last 2 weeks of March and plans to sell the withheld metal inventory in anticipation of a precious metals price rebound in Q2. Now, a number of things going on there. Do you like that move yourself? Is that maybe helpful? You know, could this catch on amongst silver producers? And is it maybe helpful for price? Just because, I mean, that's 500,000 ounces. It sure seems that they didn't sell. That it sure seems the Perth Mint would like to get their hands on.
Wouldn't they? You know what? I actually would have missed this. I might have picked up on it, you know, a couple of days from now, because, like I said, I don't necessarily read all of the press releases from the larger cap producers. But I mean, that's a fantastic move. And I hope it becomes a trend across the industry. You mentioned First Majestic, and Keith does that from time to time. And, you know, speaking of SSR mining, there have been times historically when they've done that as well, where they'll say outright, look, we think the price of silver is going higher. We're not selling all of our production right now. So, I hope if the price doesn't move higher during the second quarter, I hope they keep holding on to it, you know, because eventually the price is going to move higher. I think if these companies get enough emails from investors saying, hey, why are you selling everything you produce? The price of silver is going higher. Why don't you take advantage of that by withholding production? You know, I think investors could possibly force the issue. That may be naive, but if this works for Endeavor, I think you'd probably see a few more companies start to do it.
Yeah. And why wouldn't they? Aren't you kind of believing in yourself, believing in your own product a little bit? You know,
that's exactly right.
It's not directly comparable to a stock purchase, but, you know, buyback program, but it's kind of in the ballpark. You know,
well, this is better than that.
Yeah. But I mean, you're voting on, you know, you're with, rather than exchanging your product for dollars, you're saying, no, we'll just hang on to our product for a little while because we like it better than dollars.
Well, I mean, they obviously understand what's going on in the market in terms of, you know, the funny business from the banks. And they clearly have the price of silver is going higher. I think they're aligning the company's interests with shareholders' interests here.
There you go.
I think it's a brilliant move.
Jeez, it's a stunning development.
In fact, now I'm going to have to evaluate Endeavor Silver and possibly put it in my next issue of the mining stock
I like it. Then I'm going to front run you, and I'm going to go buy some of this stuff for myself today. Tell you that.
I actually used to cover and recommend Endeavor. I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago when it was a smaller company.
Yeah. No, I owned it too. And I remember they didn't have any debt. That was the main thing that turned me on to them 8, 10 years ago.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about it is that, you know, they get penalized because, you know, they have smaller silver mines, and their life of mine is, you know, it's always, you know, oh, we got a 2-year life of mine. Well, when I spoke to the company back then, they're like, well, yeah, that's for accounting purposes. We have to publish it as a 2-year life of mine, but, you know, we already know there's a ton more of resource there, and we can just keep every year we extend the life of mine by another year. So, you know, that's the type of thing that you got to look at when you're looking at these companies. I mean, Endeavor's gone from $1.50 last May to as high as $6.50. In February. So, I mean, what a great play that would have been. I'm sorry I missed that.
Maybe I'm gonna get another shot at it. We shall see.
I had it, you know, below $3 4 or 5 years ago, but I missed this move, that's for sure.
Well, you know, and if they're right about price, and they're gonna have quite a bit of earnings in the second quarter. You know, if they do sell some of the silver in that quarter,
yeah, that reminds me, by the way, because I did happen to look, I've been trading Hecla call options because they're, you know, near money, you know, and maybe 3 or 4 weeks out because they're dirt cheap. And I looked at their, they happened to release their production report today as well. And I tweeted out, you know, based on their Q1 production report, Hecla should beat estimates despite the decrease in gold production, because the increase in silver production on a gold equivalent basis was much greater than the decline in gold production. Plus they had big increases in their lead and zinc production. So I have a feeling their numbers, their Q1 numbers are going to be very strong.
Yep. And you know what? And again, I remind everybody listening, because we were talking about this earlier this week as well, the average cost for gold that all these gold miners used in the first quarter of last year was $1,480.
So even on the price that they received.
Yeah. So yeah. Even with price falling from 1900 at the end of 2020 down to what, 1700 at the end of March, that's what we'll call an average of 1800 then, huh? Well, from 1480 up to 1800, that's pretty easy math. That's about 20%. So year over year numbers should look pretty good as these earnings reports start to come out. And that's one other thing to keep in mind that may provide a little upside momentum. You start breaking these trends, getting above some of these moving averages, and the thing starts to feed on itself. So my friend, my tree hugging, granola eating, weed smoking Colorado friend, I always got to make fun of you guys out there. Thank you so much for your time. Again, everybody, investmentresearchdynamics.com. The Short Sellers Journal, which I know we didn't get a chance to talk about that today, but unfortunately I got to go. And even more importantly, I guess, for this discussion, the Mining Stock Journal. Great stuff from my friend Dave Kranzler, and great conversation today, Dave. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. I always love coming on to your show.
We always have fun, my friend, and hopefully we will see you soon. Again, thanks everybody for listening. We'll have another one of these Thursday conversations for you next week.